who are some of the bands now that you're booking during this time period about?
We had Joker's Wild. We had Ray Vaughn's for a while. I had booked them in the early days. I worked with Jim Johnson and Underbeats. Obviously, the South 40 was my pet band, I guess I should say.
South 40?
Yeah.
Who was in South 40?
Dave Wagner, Dick and Larry Wiegand, Dave Middlemiss. That's Dave. Mm-hmm. And the drummer was... name is going by me.
Niels?
Yeah, Harry Niels, yeah. Yeah, there's... That was the hard thing in the business. There's so many people come and go. I mean, it just so quick changeover.
You're talking about band members?
Yeah, band members. Always a big problem trying to remember. That's why I kept telling, I only want to deal with one guy from the band. I don't want to deal with all five of you. Because it takes, you know, you can't tell one guy and expect him that he tells the other ones. You got to get one guy and say, are you going to listen? Are you going to be the one that I talk to?
So South 40 was... You said was your pet project?
Well, that's a band that we built up from in the house. Mm-hmm. We started a publicity campaign with little money that we had.
Prior to the band playing?
Right, prior to anybody knowing who was in the band or anything. And then the band was rehearsing and they came out kicking buns right off the bat. And you can always tell when you make a right decision because the phone rings, you don't have to call. Calls come to you.
So they were popular right off the bat.
Yes. They were repeat bookings right away. I mean, they were in a 95% repeat, like the Morticians, right up there. Morticians had a 95% repeat booking.
Were they from out of town?
They were from Stillwater.
How did you locate them, or did they track you down?
They came to me through Dr. James F. Lee.
A doctor?
Yeah. And he's a chiropractor. Hmm. And he passed away, two, maybe 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. He also brought me the Loves, three girls, singers. And I had them out with the Marvelous Marauders and Thaddeus Toombs in a show we called the Midwest. What did we call it? Midwest. Troop Midwest. I just saw Kathy from the Loves 2 weeks ago. Just about dropped my shorts. I was so...
So the three girls were singers?
Right.
And the other bands would back them up?
Well, they worked mainly with the Marvelous Marauders and Ray Vaughn's or South 40. I don't recall
anymore. So the Marauders were one of your bands also?
It was a show band, yes. They were very, very good.
What city were the Marauders from?
Marshall, Minnesota.
They were a horn band?
Yes. And they did a very polished show opening. Mm-hmm. They were very... I was totally blown away by their first audition. I went out to see them on a job because I had already been told that they were very, very good, and I had a fast job, and I put them in there, and I went out to see them, and I went, oh, boy. This is a whole different ball game again.
Had you seen the Fabulous Flippers?
Yes, I had seen the Flippers. Yes, I drove out to see them.
Where did you see the Flippers?
In Lawrence, Kansas. I drove down there to see them.
Their reputation was already up here?
Listening to KOMA, they were working like 27 dates a month out of 30. That tells you the band's doing something right. So I went down to see what it was like and went, I don't know if our kids are ready for this. I mean, this was really polished. I mean, these guys came out from the minute they walked on the stage, your attention was on the stage. I mean, they just hit you that hard.
Obviously, they had horns, but what else made them different?
Just the arrangements of the tunes that they were playing. They were playing Taste of Honey, mm-hmm. which was... I wouldn't say a rock and roll record, and the kids just ate it up big time. I mean, they got applause for 2-3 minutes after they played that
this
song.
This is the Beatles song?
Taste of Honey?
Yeah.
No, this would be Herb Albert, maybe. mm-hmm. something on that order, I think. Very, very, you had to work at it, let's put it this way. Mm-hmm. One thing I always admired about Tony Andreessen from the Trashmen is he could play Malaguena. Just a beautiful song, and they'd play that in the middle of the night, and the crowd would stop and absorb it.
They'd stop dancing.
Yes, and absorb the song and applaud good, and that really was, to me, that we had an audience that was a little bit more aware than just thump, thump, thump. I don't know how else to explain it. I'm not a musician. I don't play anything. I just love music.
So the Marauders were, in a way, similar to the Flippers?
Yes, they did a very, very nice pop. Compared to the rest of the bands that I had, they were over here. Yeah, they were separately, because they had the horn section, and then they made more of a show out of the deal.
So it was a show band.
Yeah, I don't like to use that term, show band.
Okay.
Because when I think of show band, I think of the 30s and 40s guy where you have the crooner up front, and that's a little, I'm dating myself now. I'm an antique.
I believe the Marauders had their own bus.
Yes. I co-signed for the loan. I co-signed for 21 bands on loans. I never got burnt by one band.
What did a bus cost back in those days?
$2,500. I flew down to Chicago with them to pick it up. And we drove out of downtown Chicago in rush hour traffic. I put her in gear, and we didn't stop till we got to Minneapolis.
A Greyhound bus?
It was a 47-passenger flexible.
47 passengers?
Yep. Had a little scoop on the back, the air scoop, that blew through, supposedly, to keep the motor cool, I think. But
well, I would assume a big band like the Marauders would have to make more money than a typical band.
I'm going to say they made between $350 and $750.
Compared to a typical band that would make?
$150 to
$250. Okay.
$300-something. I was going to say, some of the money today that I hear bands getting, I sit here and go, how do they make it when we couldn't make it back then with that kind of money?
How did you run into the 19th Amendment?
They were the Exotics when I heard about them at first, and I didn't like the name Exotics because the club owners right away thought it was a strip band, and I went, nope.
This was an all-girl band from Owatonna.
Mm-hmm.
Had you seen them play as the Exotics?
Yeah, at the Owatonna Ballroom one night.
Okay, what'd you think of them?
Thought they needed help, but that would be, the one thing that the musicians do is they help one another.
Right.
Agents don't get together and help one another. They cut each other's throats.
Was that a unique thing back then, to have an all-girl band?
Yes. Yes, it was. I always was happy when they got a phone call, because the girls said right away, we aren't going to be able to compete with the boy bands. And I said, well, you got to work at it. The more you play. I took them on a 2-week road trip through Iowa, and I think we got return booking on every place except one.
Did you book bands at the Roof Garden in Okoboji?
Oh, Joker's Wild played there. The Marauders played there. South 40 played there. Morticians, I don't know if they made it there. I don't remember anymore. Darla Olson was the guy's name. He had a very good connection with Dick Clark. He handled a lot of the tours across the country for Dick Clark, or at least in the Midwest, maybe I shouldn't say across the country. And he just knew everybody. I mean, he, I don't know if he was a retired theatrical agent or whatever, where he got his connections from.
What was the Prom Ballroom like in St. Paul?
Oh, the Prom Ballroom. Wednesday night, teen dances. Very big. Fabulous Flippers are the only ones that I know that filled it.
Did you book bands in there?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Morticians did well there. The He-Twos did well there. Mm-hmm. He-Twos had a vocalist that could sing like a bird.
The He Twos.
Yeah. Hmm. Bob and Tom Bearer, and I don't recall the rest of the guy's names in the band. The one young man that really sang, though, I don't recall his name.
Could these ballrooms, did these ballrooms hold like 1,000 people or more? Or?
The prom ballroom, I think the Fabulous Flippers put in 4,753, if I remember correctly.
4,753?
4,753 people.
4,753
mm-hmm.
people?
Mm-hmm. It was a huge place.
On one night?
Yeah. It was a huge ballroom. I'm going to say the dance floor had to be 100 by 300. Wow. Prom ballroom?
Prom? Oh, yeah. Huge.
100 by 300, easy. Maybe more. And then they had side, you know, areas where you had your tables and booths and everything. So,
it was a big venue.
Yeah, it was a big venue, huge venue. The stage could hold 35, 40 people real easy.
Jules Herman.
Yeah.
With his big band.
Yeah, well, Jules Herman, big band would play there.
David, when did you first get a copy of the Trashman's 45 Surfing Bird?
I was on duty on the 38th parallel in South Korea, listening to my local Armed Forces Network radio show. A gentleman by the name of Bob Mercer, and would be the grandson of Johnny Mercer,
the songwriter.
Songwriter called me up and said, "I hear you're from Minneapolis and that you were in the music business." And I said, "Who's this?" You know, it's like 11 o'clock at night. I'm running a telephone communications exchange. And he said, "Well," he says, "I was in the music business in the States." He says, "And I'm putting in my 2 years like you are." He says, "And I hear you're from Minneapolis." And I go, "Yeah." He said, "Do you know about a band called the Trashmen?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, I just got my disc in." And when he got a disc, it was like this big around. I did see it 2 weeks after, a week after that. It was like a 36-inch platter with music just on one side.
A vinyl record?
That was, yeah, it was a, all kinds of music. There was a bunch of piles of songs on there.
On one disc?
On one disc, flat. It wasn't two-sided. Like a, it's like a CD would be today.
It's like a 45 RPM or 33 and a third?
I think 33 and a third, but it was huge. That's the way he got every week's program that way, with all the new songs on it.
Had you ever seen one?
No.
A record that size?
Never saw one before. It was a pre-recorded radio program.
Okay.
And he said, "Well, I got a song here by a band called the Trashmen." I said, "Well, put the song on." I said, "I can tell you if it's them or not." So he put the song on, and I said, "Well, that sounds like them." And he said, "Should I put it on the air?" And I said, "Well, I guess I would. You gotta shake everybody up with that one." Because most of the music we were getting was pretty sublime.
And that was the first time you heard the song?
That was the first time I heard the song, yeah. And he played it to me over the radio the first time before I, and he said, "Should I put it on the air?" And I said, "Sure. Tell the kids from Minneapolis that this is a local band from the Twin Cities."
So then you weren't surprised when it became a national hit.
Well, I don't know about it being a national hit. I was just amazed that it was out, you know, that it was, because that was, I left in April and this was October. So that was pretty fast.
I'm looking at a B Sharp poster here that has some of your bands on here. The He Twos, where were they from?
I'm going to say St. Paul East Side, if I remember correctly.
Do you recall any of the musicians in that band?
Bob and Tom Bearer. Bob was a drummer, and Tom was a guitar player, vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two other members of the band that I don't recall anymore.
Okay, the Morticians we talked about, they were from Stillwater.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall any musicians who were in that band?
Hugh Kramer and Chris Nelson, yeah.
So you have some competition in the booking business. Oh, yes.
Always competition.
Who were your competitors?
Marshall Edelstein, Dick Shapiro, Randy Levy. Randy Levy was a... he wasn't a booking agent the way I understand a booking agent. I don't believe mm-hmm. he had a union license. He was a buy-sell agent.
You had to have a union license to book bands?
I had license 600. I don't know what Marsh's number is. If he's, I don't think union means anything today. You're mm-hmm. talking back then, union. You couldn't play Minneapolis Auditorium, for instance. So you're going to bring in an artist. Say you're going to bring in Arlo Guthrie. He's a one-guy show. They have a 24-man minimum on that building, which means Arlo Guthrie sings, plays up there, and 23 guys sit down there and get paid, and they don't do nothing.
That's a union rule.
That was a union rule then. I don't know if that's in effect today or not. I have no idea. I haven't promoted anything.
In those days, were most of the musicians members of the union?
Of a union, yes. Mm-hmm. I always told the guys, find somebody that lived in St. Cloud or Faribault or out of town and join using his address so you didn't have to pay the big fee, because most of the guys were never going to play in Minneapolis anyway, where they would have to have an actually Minneapolis card. And unions got mad at me for that, but it made a lot of kids legal that would not have been able to afford to go legal at the rate that the union was in Minneapolis. I think it was $100.50, and they could join out of town for $12.50. So
once you were a member of a out of town union, you could play anywhere.
Yeah,
in
you
the
paid
state.
A traveling fee every time you played in another jurisdiction, but that traveling fee over 3 years' time never added up to half of your fees for joining the Minneapolis union.
If you played out of state, were you covered by the union if you played out of state, or?
I never had any problems with the union. I took care of the stuff I had trouble with a hotel owner not liking boys with long hair. I got into it with Travel Lodge, I think it was, over the Joker's Wild.
Oh, let's talk about the Joker's Wild. do you remember the first time you saw them play?
The first time I saw them play. Well, it probably wasn't. They probably didn't even have a name then. I don't remember. I don't recall anymore. Mm-hmm.
They were a three-piece
mm-hmm.
power trio.
Yeah, power trio is right. Yep.
So some club owners or a hotel owner didn't like their hair length?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Was that in Minnesota or out of town?
No, that was what, Kansas? I think it was Kansas, someplace out there. So we got in really good with the Travelodge Hotel after that. So,
did you work with Bill Deal at some of the concerts?
Before I went in the Army, I did, not after.
Before?
Yeah.
Okay. He'd show up.
He had his thing going with WDGY Radio, doing his promotion with the clubs, and then people would ask him what bands to put in, so he'd start bringing bands just like I was doing, and it was a natural progression for him.
So he winds up with Dick Shapiro as Central Booking Agency.
Well, I think they were Central Booking Agent. Then they were, after that, he was Company 7. I don't remember all. It was Path Musical Productions when I first got out of the Army.
Mm-hmm.
He was Path Musical Productions. Mm-hmm. I had lunch with him one time, Dick.
Dick Shapiro?
Yeah. Never had lunch with Marsh.
Never?
No. But I went to Marsh's parties when he invited me. So
there was some competition mm-hmm. between the booking agents. Mm.
There was enough of a market back then. It was huge. It was unbelievably huge. Every school was having something. All in the summer times, there was all of a sudden it just... I mean, all these kids came... You know, the baby boomers that are now baby boomers were all, it was phenomenal. how many kids were running around, and all of them had some money in their pockets, which was unlike my generation when nobody had any money in the pocket.
When did you first get involved in having a record label?
Well, it was after I got out of the Army. I knew that. I don't really... I guess I can't just pin you down a date or a song, for that matter. Somehow we got involved with one called You Rule Me by the Cornerstones out of North Dakota.
So you saw a lot of changes in the 1960s. Well, going back to the late 50s with Elvis Presley and the early 60s, kind of an innocent era of rock and roll. And then the mid-60s and later 60s, things are changing, right?
Oh, yeah. Later 60s, it started to get really loud.
Did you like the music still at that point?
Some of it, yes. I liked Jethro Tull when they came on. I really liked them. I liked the Allman Brothers. Didn't really care for the Grateful Dead.
Speaking of the Grateful Dead, we have to talk about the Labor Temple.
Yeah, that was. They were the first act in the Labor Temple.
What was your involvement with the Labor Temple?
It was my money, me. No partners. I had friends that were helping, you know, that were, I shouldn't say, they were employees first and friends after, just because of working together. And so, Labor Temple was, my idea there was I wanted to buy the building because it had on, it was a three-story building, had a big dance hall on the top floor, which the day before I opened, they had 3,351 people vote for the bus strike. All right, well, after I did a few concerts, the fire marshal said I had to cut the attendance in half. But I already had the bands booked at a price of 3,000 people to come in.
Let's back up a little bit. How many people did they draw?
Well, we sold out the building about three times over.
What was the capacity?
Well, everybody didn't pay. We just quit taking money. There was no way we could stop them.
How many?
The place was packed.
How many people would it hold normally?
Well, it was 3,350 people had voted the day before, and they were all standing in the building with no chairs. With people on the stage.
This is a labor union.
Yeah, labor union having a vote. There's 3,000 people standing up. The fire marshal wanted me to put in folding chairs.
For the Grateful Dead?
No. This was 6 weeks after when the city started to get on my case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They were getting complaints of noise because we had big glass windows on the side, and so the noise was getting out. There was an apartment building right next door.
Do you recall what year that was when the Grateful Dead opened up there? Or the Grateful
July
Dead?
January 69.
1969 is the first concert with...
25 below zero outside, and I'm turning away thousands of people. This is on a Sunday night.
And I believe Blackwood Apology was the opening act?
Boy, that could be. You got a better memory than I do. I don't have any posters. I don't have any of that stuff left. I don't know who was the opening act anymore.
Were the Grateful Dead easy to work with, or?
Oh, yeah, they were. Hey, they came in six Falcons and six U-Haul trucks, and they had an iguana, a rooster, a billy goat, a snake, three kids. What else was there? I don't think we had any cats. They were family on the road is what they were.
What was the cover charge to see the Grateful Dead?
$350. And people yelled at me for that.
Who else did you book into the Labor Temple?
Oh, boy. Allman Brothers. That was their first date north of the Mason-Dixon line. And the way I got them to come was I called them up on the phone. I had been in service in Augusta, Georgia, and so I had heard about them from down there. And I called them up on the phone. I called up, I'm trying to remember the agency's name. Anyway, I said, you know, guys, you got to come up to Minneapolis and play, because I said, we got the largest record distributor in the world here. And I said, if you make noise here, you're going to make noise everywhere. So they drove up for $500 to play the date, and they started to sell product.
And the record distributor was?
Heidlicher Brothers.
Did you know Amos and Dan?
No, I did not. I had seen them, probably stood within 50 feet of them, but never. I was a pretty shy guy back then. I wasn't, and especially with people that had lots of money.
Did you ever have any contact with Wolfman Jack?
Other than to shake Dave's hand, that's. Mm-hmm. I met him at George Garrett's one day. And this would have been about the same time as the Trashmen were out there.
But George Garrett's, you mean Nickel Lake Records?
Mm-hmm. Nickel Lake in the basement, yeah. I was down there the day that Bob Reed played with the boys and tried out down there in the basement. I was sitting on the steps.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
This is before Surfing Bird, is it?
Yes, yeah, before. It was when Bob joined the band.